As you know, most Christians will be observing Easter this year on Sunday, April 8th. You probably know this, but in case you don't, Holman Bible Study has a paragraph on how they choose Easter. Holman's Bible Dictionary, I should say. The early centuries saw considerable controversy over the proper date for the Easter celebration. A minority, influenced by Jewish origins of Christianity, insisted that celebration should occur on the 14th of Nisan of the Jewish calendar, the day of the crucifixion. The 14th of Nisan, the day of the crucifixion, according to the Gospel of John. Most Christians rejected this practice because it meant that the special yearly celebration of the resurrection would not usually occur on Sunday, the weekly day of the resurrection. Since about AD 300, the date of Easter has been determined by a complex calculation using the lunar calendar. In general, Easter is the first Sunday after the full moon, following the vernal equinox. The first Sunday after the full moon, following the vernal equinox. Well, the vernal equinox is usually March 21st. That's next Wednesday. The full moon who follows it is the first day of unleavened bread. This year it's April 7th, which is the 15th of Nisan. 15th means it's the middle of the month. That's when the moon's full. So Easter must always come after the Passover. They set it up so they can never fall on the same day. So this year, Easter will be Sunday, April 8th. But was Jesus resurrected from the grave on a Sunday? When Jesus was asked for a sign that he was the Messiah, he gave a stunning reply. Let's look at Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. First, a little background. Matthew chapter 12, verse 22. Then one was brought to him who was demon-possessed, blind and mute. Boy, that's a terrible situation to be in. And he healed him, so that the blind and the mute man both spoke and saw. And all the multitudes were amazed and said, "Could this be the son of David? Might this be the Messiah that they were waiting for?" Now when the Pharisees heard it, they said, "This fellow does not cast out demons except by Beelzebub, the ruler of demons." So they had a quick accusation or explanation to blame Christ about that. And he answers them in verse 25. But Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, "Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation." Brethren, that's quite a statement. I don't know that we really understand as fully as we should what that statement means. Right now, the United States is at loggerheads with each other. This is not good. This is not good. This polarization that we have is not good. And Jesus didn't say most kingdoms. He said every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation. And every city or house divided against itself will not stand. If Satan casts out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then will his kingdom stand? Notice he calls Satan his kingdom. He does have a kingdom. It's not going to stand, but he's got a kingdom. And if he's divided against himself, he's wise enough to know that's not going to be good. And if I cast out demons, verse 27, by Beelzebub, by whom do your sons cast them out? If that's the key, then this is, he says, therefore they shall be your judges. But if I cast out demons by the Spirit of God, surely the kingdom of God has come upon you. And he talks about entering a strong man's house. He just demonstrated the power of the kingdom of God. Graphically. Now in verse, then he continues talking. Then in verse 38 of Matthew 12, then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered him, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." So what they effectively did was change the subject. "We want to see a sign from you." And now, notice subtly, brethren, what he's doing is trying to shift the burden of proof from themselves of witnessing the power they just witnessed and the teaching they just heard, which I didn't cover, but it's very strong. They want to change the subject and shift the responsibility to Christ by a sign. They meant some supernatural evidence. So what they're saying, in effect, is if you're the Messiah, prove it. They wanted the burden on him, not on their discernment. Verse 39. And he answered and said to them, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. So he says, an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. Most proofs were already evident. They were there. Seeking more revealed their unwillingness to acknowledge what they were already seeing. That's evil. Unwilling to see what is frankly right in front of you is evil. And it's adulterous. Why is it adulterous? Well, because the children of Israel were in a covenant relationship with God. And so they were turning away from their God and trying to trap him into shifting responsibility to him. They exculpated themselves, to use that word, means take away your guilt, and they tried to put it on him. And then he said, and no sign will be given to it except. No sign will be given to it except. There would be one supernatural occurrence they would never be able to refute. 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And then Jesus would rise from the grave. Brethren, that's never happened before. It's never happened since. Well, I guess there were some after the resurrection that came out of the graves, but not 3 days and three nights. Now, David Stern, when he's commenting on John 11:39, not on this place, but when he's commenting on John 11:39, where Lazarus was raised from the grave, he was raised. He wasn't in the grave, but he was in the tomb, I guess. But anyway, he comments that medical science was not up to today's standards back then. Jesus came, John 11:39 says, Jesus said, take away the stone. And Martha, sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there's a stench, for he's been dead 4 days. 4 days. Now, in that time, David Stern said that when they thought somebody was dead, sometimes they weren't. So they required that somebody be dead a full 3 days past to be absolutely sure they were dead. In that climate, 4 days would have been too much. It had gone into corruption. 3 days, we know they're dead. So Jesus would fulfill their requirement to be certain a person was dead for 3 days and three nights and then come back to life. Let's go to Psalm 16, where this was prophesied. Psalm 16. By the way, we're going to go back and forth in the Gospels a lot here today. So you want to do your finger exercises. Toughen up. Psalm 16. Let's go into verse 9. We'll begin at verse 9. Therefore my heart is glad and my glory rejoices. My flesh will also rest in hope. For you will not leave my soul, David's talking about his own soul, in Sheol, which is the grave, You will not leave my soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One. God is often described as the Holy One of Israel. Nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. 4 days. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures evermore. So it was prophesied that he wouldn't see corruption. In other words, it wouldn't go on for 4 days. But he would be resurrected before that. 3 days. You know the prophecy. We covered that recently in a sermon on Jonah, that he was 3 days and three nights in the great fish. Now, both the Greek and the Hebrew, people will claim it means parts of them and all that. Well, it still doesn't work out. Let's look at John 11. That's before the Lazarus incidents. John 11. And we'll find a little definition here. John 11 and verse 9. Jesus answered, John 11, verse 9, are there not 12 hours in a day? And if anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if one walks in the night, in the other 12 hours, he stumbles because the light is not in him. So here Jesus is telling us what a day is. A day is 12 hours of light and 12 hours of darkness. Simple, my dear Mr. Watson. That's what everybody else thinks, too. It's only the Bible theologians that have to go into parts. Okay, the sign Jesus gave of his messiahship was 3 days and three nights in the grave. But they call April 6th Good Friday. I don't know why they call it Good Friday. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And that name didn't begin being used till about 500 A.D., but anyway, and then they call it Good Friday when he was crucified, when by that time. And they claim he was raised early Sunday, Easter morning. So Friday night is one night. Saturday is one day. Saturday night is two nights. And Sunday morning, just before sunrise, is only two nights in one day. It's not three anything. What gives? Now, we've looked at Matthew and Jonah, but I want to look at some other text here, and we'll be jumping around a little bit. I tried to make the jumping around as little as possible, and I succeeded somewhat. But let's go to John chapter 2. John chapter 2. I didn't succeed completely because you have to jump around a little bit to see this. Mr. Armstrong used to say the Bible's like a jigsaw puzzle. You have to look at different places and see how it ties together and then put it together and get the complete picture. Okay, John chapter 2, let's begin in verse 18. So the Jews answered and said to him, what sign do you show us since you do these things? Jesus answered and said, destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then the Jews said, it has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you will raise it up in 3 days? But he was speaking of the temple of his body. Therefore, when he was risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. They got it. Now let's go to Mark chapter 8. We're going backwards. Well, not quite. Well, we are going backwards, but we're going to go forward again. Right now we're telling the children of Israel to go backwards. Later we'll tell them to go forward. Okay. So he said, in 3 days I will raise it up in John chapter 2. That means no more than 72 hours. Now in Mark 8, verse 31, And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected of the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. After 3 days means no more than at least 72 hours. So in 3 days means no more than 72 hours, and after 3 days means at least 72 hours. Now let's look at Mark 9, verse 31 and 32. Mark 9:31-32. For he taught his disciples and said to them, "The Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of men, and they will kill him. And after he is killed, he will rise the third day." Now, to arise the third day means between 48 hours and 72 hours. 49 hours is the third day. So it's between 48 hours and 72. So we have one that's no more than 72, one that's at least 72, and here's the one between 48 and 72. Now let's go to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27. And let's begin in verse 62. Matthew 27 and verse 62. And the high priest arose and said to him, "Do you answer nothing? What is it these men testified against you?" But Jesus kept silent. Matthew 27. Get the right book, Bob, or the right chapter. Matthew 27, verse 62. On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, saying, "Sir, we remember while he was still alive how the deceiver said, 'After 3 days I will arise,' at least 72 hours. Therefore, command that the tomb be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people, 'He is risen from the dead.' So the last deception will be worse than the first." Pilate said to them, "You have a guard. Go your way. Make it as secure as you know how." Oh, boy, do you have to make it secure, because God's involved here. So they went and made the tomb secure, sealing the stone. They sealed it. And they set a guard. You know what that ended up doing? Making them witnesses of the resurrection. Then they had to lie. Okay, all the statements that we've read, to fulfill all those statements, Jesus had to be in the grave exactly 72 hours, no more, no less, to fulfill all those different phrases. The sign he gave didn't take place. And that 72-hour fact, it can't be more and it can't be less, leads to another conclusion. To be in the grave exactly 72 hours, he had to be raised from the grave at the very same time he went into it. Just 72 hours. Exactly 72 hours from this second is 3 days ahead at the exact second. So if we can determine the exact time of his burial, we'll know the time of his resurrection 3 days later, 72 hours later. Let's stay right there in Matthew 27, and this time we'll look at verse 46. Well, it's verse 45 that begins this section in my Bible, at least. Now, from the sixth hour, that's Roman time as we understand it, which is 6 a.m. Six hours of daylight, so it's about noon. About the sixth hour until the ninth hour, there was darkness over all the land. Now about the ninth hour, which is about 3 p.m, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, "Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani," that is, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Which is the beginning of Psalm 22. Some of them who stood there said that this man is calling on Elijah. Immediately one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with sour wine and put it on the reed and offered it to him to drink. The rest said, "Let him alone. Let's see if Elijah will come and save him." And as And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. He yielded up his spirit. That was the time that meant he died at the ninth hour. Which, interestingly, is when in the temple the Passover lambs began to be sacrificed. By the Jews. Jesus kept the Passover the day before. That's another story, but anyway, everybody knows that. He kept it the night before, and then they kept it the night after. I think everybody knows that. Let's drop down to verse 57. Now, when evening had come, there came, this is that with ninth hour, it's mid-afternoon, when evening had come, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who himself had also become a disciple of Jesus. This man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded the body to be given to him. When Joseph had taken the body, he wrapped it in clean linen cloth and laid it in his new tomb, which he had hewn out of the rock. And he rolled a large stone against the door of the tomb and departed. And it talks about Mary being there. And then in verse 62, and on the next day, which would be the first holy day of unleavened bread, which followed the day of preparation, the next day follows the day of preparation, like yesterday was Friday, the day of preparation, today is the next day, it's a Sabbath. The chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, saying, Sir, we remember how the deceiver said, after 3 days I will rise. So we've already covered that, but I just want to put it back in again. So for the Hebrews, the day ends at sunset, the new day begins. The preparation day ended at sunset, and the Sabbath began. Let's go to Mark 15. Mark 15. And we'll look at verses 32. We'll begin in verse 33. Now when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, I'd like you to notice, as we go through these things, let's notice two things. The day that he died was a preparation day, and he died at the ninth hour. At the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani, which is translated, my God, why have you forsaken me? Some of them stood by when they heard and said, look, he's calling Elijah. And they went with the sponge, and someone filled with sponge, sour wine, put it on a reed, and offered it to him to drink, saying, let him alone, let's see if Elijah will come take him. And Jesus cried out with a loud voice and breathed his last. Now notice verse 42. Now when evening had come, because it was a preparation day, it's the day before the Sabbath, as it makes very plain, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent man, came, and we know that story, so let's skip down to verse 46. And they brought him linen, and he bought fine linen, took him down and wrapped him in the linen, and laid him in the tomb, which has been hewn out of the rock, and rolled the stone against the door of the tomb. So there he was sealed away. Now let's go to Luke. Luke chapter 23. I know this is a lot of stuff, but it ties together here. It'll all hook in together. Luke 23, let's begin in verse 44. Remember, we're noticing two things. It was a preparation day, and he died at the ninth hour. Now it was the sixth hour. About the sixth hour, there is darkness over all the earth until the ninth hour. Then the sun was darkened and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And when Jesus had cried out with a loud voice, he said, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. Having said this, he breathed his last. So when the centurion saw what had happened, he glorified God, saying, surely this was a righteous man. Let's go down to verse 50. But now behold, there was a man named Joseph, a council member, a good and just man. He had not consented to their decision and deed. He was from Arimathea, a city of the Jews, who himself was also waiting for the kingdom of God. The man went to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then he took it down, wrapped it in linen, laid it in the tomb, and was hewn out of the rock where no one had ever been. The day the preparation day, and the Sabbath drew near. They had to get him in the tomb before the Sabbath. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned to prepare spices and oils, and they rested the Sabbath day according to the commandment. We'll go into that verse again later on. Now let's go to John 19. John's account. John 19. And let's look at verse 40. John 19, verse 40. Then they took the body of Jesus, bound it in strips of linen with spices, as the custom of the Jews to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new tomb, which no one had been laid. And there they lay Jesus because of the Jews' preparation day. There they lay Jesus because of the Jews' preparation day, for the tomb was nearby. So they got him in quickly into the grave. they took care of that. So the gospel writers, all four, confirm Jesus Christ died at the ninth hour and was put into the grave just before sunset on the preparation day. Now the scriptures show that Jesus was buried in the afternoon between 3 p.m., the Roman ninth hour, and sunset. To be our Messiah, the only sign he would give the Pharisees, Jesus had to rise exactly 72 hours later between 3 p.m. and sunset in the afternoon. Now, how does that fit in with a Friday night and Sunday morning? Well, I think you'll agree it doesn't. The teaching of a Friday crucifixion and a Sunday resurrection is totally wrong. We've seen that all four Gospels state that Jesus died on the preparation day before the Sabbath. If the preparation day had been a Friday, then he would have to be in the grave three nights, Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, and 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, rising Monday afternoon just before sunset. Now, that sure messes things up, doesn't it? It doesn't make any sense at all. Because it couldn't be that way, because we know when they came to the tomb. Let's go back to Matthew again, and we'll start back through our four. Matthew 28. Matthew 28. It couldn't be Monday afternoon, because we know when they came to the first day of the week. Matthew 28, verse 1. Now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn, that means early Sunday morning, Mary Magdalene and Mary other came to the tomb. All right? In verse 6, they're told, he is not here. He is risen. As he said, come see the place where the body lay. He's not here. It's past tense. He's already gone. He's not there. They didn't know he wasn't there, but he wasn't there. Now let's go to Mark 16. Mark 16. So we know it's a preparation day in the ninth hour, and we know he was resurrected by the first day of the week. Mark 16, and we'll go for the first seven verses. Now when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mother James and Salome brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Very early, see, they were going to come here later. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun had risen. And they said among themselves, who will roll away the stone from the door of the tomb for us? They wanted to get in there to get these spices on the body. But when they had looked up, they saw the stone had been rolled already, for it was very large. And entering the tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe sitting on the right side. And they were alarmed. But he said to them, do not be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. See the place where they laid him. But go tell his disciples and Peter that he's going before you into Galilee, that you will see him as he said to you. Now, did you notice that he just mentioned Peter? Peter, who had just denied him three times and never had a chance to apologize. Or never had a chance to, because Christ died. So Peter gets a special mention, and I can only imagine it's just to say, give a little encouragement to Peter. That's how I understand that. Let's go to Luke chapter 24. I still love him. Say, I can see where Peter might have questioned that. Luke 24. Now on the verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, and certain other women went with him, came to the tomb, bringing the spices which they had prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. Then they went in and did not find the body of Jesus. As it happened, as they were greatly perplexed about this, behold, two men stood by them in shining garments. And they were afraid, and they bowed their faces to the earth, and they said to them, Why do you seek the living among the dead? Why are you looking for somebody that's living in a cemetery, in a grave? He is not here, but is risen. He is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was saying in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again. That's what he told you. And they remembered his words, and they got it. Now let's go to John chapter 1. John chapter 21, not 1, John 21 and verse 1. John 21. Oh, sorry, John 20, verse 1. I'm sorry. John 20 and verse 1. Now on the first day of the week, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early, while it was still dark, and saw the stone had been taken away from the tomb. All right, so she gets there, and he's already gone on the first day of the week. So if it was a preparation day, and he was raised on the first day of the week, he was already up, but we know he was raised on a Saturday night around sunset. How do you reconcile the two? Well, let's go to John 19. I tried to end in John, so we'd be close to John 19. John 19, verse 14. Now, it was a preparation day of the Passover. This was a special preparation day. About the sixth hour, he said to the Jews, "Behold your king." Now up to verse 31 of John 19. I hope I'm not jumping around too much. You can always go to the videotape, or at least the tape, not the videotape. Verse 31. Therefore, because it was the preparation day, that the body should not remain on the cross on the Sabbath. There was a law in the covenant with Israel that if somebody's hung on a tree, you don't leave them overnight on the Sabbath. Or don't leave them overnight, or at least not on the Sabbath. Remaining on the cross on the Sabbath, for that Sabbath was a high day. That Sabbath was a high day. And the Jews asked Pilate that their legs may be broken, that they might be taken away. They had to get these guys dead before sunset, because otherwise they'd break the law. They wouldn't want to break the law by killing innocent man, but they wanted to go to the technicalities. So the preparation day was a high day. It was preparing for a high day. You ask any Jew what a high day is, he'll tell you it's one of the seven annual holy days that God commanded the children of Israel to keep. The high days might fall on other days of the week. Pentecost is always on a Sunday, we have learned. But the other holy days can fall on a Monday, a Tuesday, a Wednesday, a Thursday, or a Sabbath. And sometimes, like this year, we're going to have one on a Friday. So as the women came to the tomb on the first day of the week, the Passover day, high day, had to be on a Thursday that year. Jesus Christ introduced the New Testament Passover on Tuesday evening. Okay? He was taken captive late Tuesday evening and tried all night by the Jews. He was delivered to Pilate early in the morning. That's John 18, 28. It might be worth looking. We're right there, John 18, 28. Then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the Praetorium. They took him from the high priest to the Roman government. And it was early morning, but they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. They were going to eat the Passover that night. Jesus ate it the night before. He introduced the New Testament symbols of Passover. But they were going to eat it that night. So they didn't go into there, but that's when he turned it over to the Romans early Wednesday morning. He was crucified the third hour. That's by Jewish reckoning, 9 a.m. See that in Mark 15, 25. He died the ninth hour. He was 6 hours in that horrible situation. And he was in the grave by sunset Wednesday evening. And Wednesday evening began the holy day, which was Thursday, the first day of unleavened bread. Okay? That means Jesus Christ was crucified on a Wednesday. Let's go back to the Old Testament, the book of Daniel. Daniel chapter 9. Daniel chapter 9. And let's look, begin in verse 24. Daniel was given this prophecy. Daniel 9, 24. 70 weeks are determined for your people and for your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity. Now, the sins weren't going to end right at that moment, but it's going to be made available to be ended from there on out. The Passover price would have been paid. To make an end of sins, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to get reconciled to God. To bring in everlasting righteousness through the Holy Spirit dwelling in us. To sum up vision and prophecy and to anoint the most holy. Know, therefore, and understand for the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem. Remember, Daniel's writing this in Babylon. From the going forth of the command to restore and build Jerusalem until Messiah, the Prince, there shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. The street shall be built again, even the wall of Jerusalem, even in troublesome times. After the 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off. That means dead. My little margin says, suffer the death penalty. After 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. He'll die, but not for his own sins. And the people of the prince who is to come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, which Titus did in 70 A.D. The end of it shall be with a flood until the end of the war, desolations are determined. Then shall he confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. Jesus Christ is going to confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. But in the midst of the week, he shall bring an end to the sacrifice and offering. In the midst of the week, is referring to 7 years, but it also can refer to 7 days. But in the midst of the week, he shall bring an end to sacrifice and offering. All sacrifice and offering is not done now. It's stopped. The temple's gone. You can't offer or sacrifice anything in the Jewish system or the Israelite system. But in the midst of the week, he shall bring an end to the sacrifice and offering. Midst of the week is Wednesday. And on the wing of abomination shall be one who makes desolate, even until the consummation which is determined is poured out on the desolate. He's going to desolate the place. And Jesus, as he walked out of the temple for the last time, says, your house is left to you desolate. So, if he's crucified on a Wednesday, and he goes into the tomb Wednesday night, you've got Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, you've got Thursday, the high day, Friday and Saturday. So he rose just before sunset, Saturday afternoon, the Sabbath. And when the women came Sunday morning, the angels told him, he's not here, he's risen. He'd been out of that grave for about 12 hours, a period of night. So the resurrection was not on Sunday. And the reason for accepting Sunday as the Sabbath is exposed as false, totally false. The Roman religious leaders wanted to continue pagan sun worship and called it Christian. It's not Christian. nor is Easter and Christmas. In fact, by claiming Jesus was in the grave less than 3 days and three nights, they're saying he did not fulfill the sign of Jewish requirement to be sure that he was actually dead, 3 days and three nights. Or legally dead, I should say. Now there are some questions about that. Let me show you Mark chapter 16. Mark chapter 16. People would have fair questions, and we want to address them. Mark 16 and verse 9. Now when he arose, early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary. He rose early on the first day of the week. He appeared to Mary, out of which he had cast seven demons. So the Greek, actually, the King James has it correctly, was risen. The Greek is the perfect tense. The action is already completed. And here's how the King James words it, although they have a comma in the wrong spot. Now when Jesus was risen, comma, that's not in the King James, early the first day of the week, they got a comma there, it shouldn't be there. Now when Jesus was risen, comma, early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary and Magdalene, out of whom he cast seven devils. Newer translations make it appear that he was raised on the first day of the week. Now why would they do that? You have to watch these guys. Let's go to Luke 24. Luke 24. Luke 24, verse 13. Luke 24. We've already been in Luke 24, but we haven't been in this verse. Now behold, two of them were traveling that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was 7 leagues from Jerusalem. The same day as what? Well, Luke 24, 1 says the first day of the week. It was the same day. This was the first day of the week as well, Sunday. And they're traveling along there. And Jesus engages them in conversation. And in verse 21, he begins to explain that. He asks them to explain what things. And he says to them in verse 21, but we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, today is the third day since these things happened. Today is the third today. These things include everything that happened involving the crucifixion. Matthew says they didn't set the watch until the high day. 3 full days had passed, and this was Sunday, the fourth day. The passage proves the crucifixion could not have been on a Friday, by the way. Because if it was 3 days, then you aren't going to say parts of days and only have 2 nights and 1 day. You can't, it's just illogical. It's just not very well thought out. So this passage proves the crucifixion could not have been on a Friday. There's one more interesting proof that I want to bring to your attention, that there were two Sabbaths that week. We're in Luke. Let's look at Luke 23, 54 to 56. Luke 23, 54 to 56. The day was the preparation, and the Sabbath drew near. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed him, and they observed the tomb and how his body laid. Then they returned, and they prepared spices. They returned, notice that, and prepared spices and fragrant oils. And they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. All right. So they had come near to him, Galilee followed him, and observed the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they left the tomb. And they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested the Sabbath, and they came back. Okay, that's pretty clear. If you keep your finger there, let's go to Mark 16. Mark 16. So Luke says they brought spices before they rested on the Sabbath. Mark says, in Mark 16, 1 and 2, now when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Salome, brought spices that they might come and anoint him. Very early in the morning, on the first day of the week, they came to the tomb when the sun is risen. So they were going to come. So they brought the spices when the Sabbath was passed. Well, one rested the Sabbath and brought the surprises, and one went to the Sabbath's past. What is that? Well, it should be easy for us because we know there were two Sabbaths that week. They had not expected him to be crucified so quickly. Apparently, they got a few spices, but they didn't think the job was properly done. It was all done very much in a rush. So there was no time or very little time to do anything like that on by sundown on Wednesday. So they could not buy them on the holy day Thursday, so they bought them on the Friday, after the high day, Mark's account, and before the weekly Sabbath, Luke's account. So they were both are correct. It's just they're different Sabbaths. And it actually shows that there were two Sabbaths in that week. Attempts to justify observing Sunday as a Sabbath are founded on a totally false premise. They say that they observe Sunday because the resurrection was on Sunday. But they know that the resurrection was on the weekly Sabbath, just before sundown. They know that Christ, the day he was crucified, was a preparation day. So they have to shorten 3 days and three nights into two nights and one day, not fulfilling either three. By doing so, they implicitly deny the only sign that Jesus gave that he is the Messiah. But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." As the Passover season approaches, let's rejoice that Jesus was risen from the dead exactly as he said.